House Judiciary Committee meeting, March 16th,
there's actually two renewable resource funds of the same money. What happens is this money is not spent annually out of the development fund class, which is a so-called renewable resource permanent fund. And then it can't be spent. So we need to fiddle around with that language. Well, it's like this. There is an opinion from the Attorney General of the session. And there was an opinion at the time that was happening in 2003 and that went to the Attorney General in 2002. But the Renewable Resource Fund doesn't take money from seven taxes. And it also has to be subject to appropriation by the legislature. So it's different from the permanent fund in that sense. No money can be spent out of the Renewable Resource Fund that has gone through the appropriation process. So they therefore insisted that in the House proposal, we were going to set up the answer is very similar to what we created in the permanent appropriation category. This would enable us to confirm that those categories that we need to be part of the court. If you want to wait, then it's my
time. I don't want to wait too far, but I think I know what came to mind.
I just want to bring it up. Why don't we actually schedule it for meeting earlier? I'm favorably disposed for it, but I think we probably ought to have it. Why don't we have, who do you want to hear from the Attorney General? Yeah, we might have to ask Clark if he could come in since he's been so much involved in all the other stuff. But I can't argue with you. Let's set this aside.
You will get somebody.
Yeah,
we'll
get some things going.
Very
good. Did Terry tell you to do it again?
No.
I think I'm wet in the
where are we going to?
Okay, there's only one problem. I think it's Larry and Frank spoke to the chair about, and that's on page 74.
It's page 74
of the committee for the vote in the session. 1, 2, 5. Well, we thought something that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon for personal protection.
And we also leave out the word sporting and that belongs to the or other activities that necessary.
Well, I think you got the outdoor.
I didn't cross out outdoor.
Okay. That other outdoor activities that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon. I don't think you have to, well, the next one about the carrying of concealed weapon for personal protection.
Fairly involved.
Yeah, it is. Well, we don't.
See, I'm not sure you want to say concealed.
Yeah, but it says concealed elsewhere. That's what you're saying in the prosecution where you want to answer to. But necessarily
involves the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. I would get.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we're trying to deal with the problem.
If there are suggestions only with the problem that Larry and I would.
May I make a suggestion? If you are going to go this route, this has to shall involve the carrying a weapon for personal protection, I suggest that you change it from a defense to an affirmative defense. I think you should put the burden on the defendant to establish that. Instead of having the burden on the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person did not carry it for personal protection. The reason I'm saying this is because if we go with this amendment, we probably will have the most expanded defense of the CCW of any state that I'm aware of. Okay, but what about the kind of having a affirmative defense?
Because I think that the situation now is that the cops are not going to invite people, innocent people, who can feel less, but people feel that they don't really have the right to do it because it's the law. Yeah, but I mean, the situation not busting countries and fishing and traffic, some of it is stuff, but those people want to feel that right themselves are not violating the law. So what we're trying to do is make them legal, but at the same time not make it hard to prosecute criminals and people that are human. Also, I think there should be commentary to Section 3 when you're trying to cover the elastic
situation.
Exactly. People are still outdoors. Outdoor activity was area here that's more convenient for him to have a museum in the south, or the archaeologist who's got a handful of samples or something like that, then the jury can buy the argument. I think walking across 4th Avenue before it rolls too much in the evening in Anchorage, somebody who was 6'4" and built like Rosie Greer arguing that he had a necessarily carrying on that outdoor activity necessarily involved in carrying a weapon for personal protection, the jury would laugh him out of the court.
I think it's also the intention here is that when he argues the word activity, we were referring to something other than what the buildings were, or walking around like 6th Avenue. And the problem is you leave sporting in, you leave out, for example, the kid in terms of a geologist or whatever.
Let me just make this comment to the record. I said, there's many years from the day old man they were going to present the outside of Kansas City, which was trying to keep the public from not feeling that every school in the arts and public and they're on the playground. They're not. I don't know whether they are or aren't. It's illegal. And I know that there's great traction, there's a strong traction, I feel very strongly that that's what we should do. And whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. They'll show up with all the experience about ammunition or guns or anything to do with that. They argue very strong points that when I'm an American, I'm prepared to handle my death and walk down the street and do what I want. Now, just because we know what we're doing here, but I can guarantee you from experience, I think that I'm not coming in having a good party. No one's wrecking my life, and then I know what happened to a business associate I know, and then I'm not going to go home and wrecking a good business that's what I'm passing. The more the harm is very dangerous by giving them a life to take a gun and make a stop. And you're still talking about it, so we're not going to do that. Right along, that's what we're doing, that might be the police out of the fact that my wife is worried if she goes downtown and kind of on any basis, she cannot carry it up. So that you are. Walking downtown, my wife going downtown, there was a threat of the judicial system, which hasn't been protected there very well. She's going to say, I'm going to harm myself. And I'm going to protect myself. So two women in a row have been successful in the streets, and I'm going to carry them. And what I feel that, I'm not arguing. I'm just saying, what we're doing is allowing me, everybody to do it, and I'm going to say, we better start talking around.
Okay.
That's
the
issue.
Thank you. First of all, in a prosecution under the section, in many of the cases, the only thing that's being prosecuted is the bearing of a concealed weapon, not a violent act or the use of a weapon. So that's what we're talking about. And secondly, here again, we've got the situation where the chairman opposed the amendment, is it's an affirmative defense. That is, that the defendant in the prosecution proceeds has to come forward with the evidence and prove to the jury beyond it, prove to the jury by preponderance of the evidence that they were involved in a lawful outdoor activity that necessarily involved the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. Now, how many juries are going to buy some of the arguments where it would be the improper action or the unreasonable nature of way of carrying a gun? In almost all cases, it's going to be interpreted to apply only to the rural area, and even then, when it really seems to be necessary, to make it a jury question, and you're going to have an Alaska jury. I understand that the concern that you've got about everybody having a gun, but also understand the Alaskan experience. We're not arming anybody. They're already armed. I don't know anybody who goes out in the bush for more than 1 or 2 days on the head to have some kind of arm with them, and usually because of the circumstances, they carry a concealed weapon, they even carry it that way. Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. Lawful, outdoor, activity. And I think
that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. That is, you've got one, two, three elements that have to be proved to the jury by a preponderance of the evidence. That the activity was lawful, that it necessarily involved the carrying of the weapon, and that it was an outdoor activity. Otherwise, the jury won't buy the defense, and you're guilty of CCW.
Okay, so you're coming to a close.
shouldn't it be if it's on his property?
Well, the property, we have dwelling. Yeah, we did, but the problem was that what it would authorize is that that was the problem with every bar owner could carry a concealed weapon.
In earlier draft, we said they could.
Oh, right, and then you decided not, then you decided to change that.
Oh, I sure did.
Well, you weren't here then.
No, very well. You didn't carry a weapon.
You couldn't see where.
Carry around and feel weapon on it, but they could have one behind the bar.
Well, then it's not concealed under those situations.
That was the whole point, right? The employee is not going to be guilty because he's sitting there.
It has to be with arms
behind the bar, but we didn't say people could arm themselves.
What happened? The original way in which the bill was written said that was all right. I thought that was fine language.
But what? The original
I know specifically that we there was a motion.
Oh,
Record. Okay. I had a discussion with concerned earlier, and I'm not sure of the exact parliamentary procedure on it, so I think perhaps we ought to make it clear on the record what we're doing. We took the draft that the committee gave us about a week or 10 days ago, and Mr. Stern then proceeded to do a cleanup of that language cleanup. Which resulted in another draft that the committee did not do. Then we took it to this little ad hoc committee of myself, Mr. Stern, Mr. Gardner, the Attorney General, and Dan Hickey, and Mike Rubenstein, and we went through it, came up with some more technical changes, and then took what we considered the technical recommendations from the Department of Law and plug them in, and that is the draft we have before you.
I got two things here. Which is which?
We have a draft, and then we should have an amendment.
Okay, the draft is the one we just started about.
Section 1, yeah, Declaration of Independence. Okay, now, as far as I'm concerned, the draft has only two substantive changes in it that the committee, I believe, should sign off on before there's a markup vehicle on it. In other words, I'm concerned about the fact that the committee didn't sign off on it, you know, keep it down the road sometime if there was ever a question as to the validity of the amendment. And that would be in on page 11 of the bill. Beginning on line 18, where it says the prior felony conviction. Then you go down to line 20, in the bill that the committee signed off on about 10 days ago, instead of less serious class of offense, the language only said less serious class. It wasn't an offense. And I'm not sure whether that's a substantive change.
I don't think it is.
I can't give you the reason why it should be, but I'll give you a reason why I'm concerned, because Amendment Number 2, the First Amendment, is talk about the classification of offenses, and that's a substantial change. What in the ad hoc committee, we got into this problem of how do you define what a class of offense was when it was not classified prior law or from another state. In other words, so what the total danger was. So instead of sticking with class, we decided to go class offense, and then with Amendment Number 2, we define what basically what an eighth felony is.
To avoid litigation.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that substance will change.
I
wouldn't anticipate an amendment we haven't passed yet, but class of offense, I think that's all right. Does anybody have any problem with that change in page 11 to 9.20? We'll get to that in a minute.
Mr. Chairman, I just realized that this draft is also missing.
Okay.
In fact, I don't know how this happened. We better go off the record for a minute. We've got a serious problem in there.
Off the record?
Yeah. Your draft is missing about a page and a half. I'm going to go get it. All right, that makes sense.
Okay, so back in the record, we that was
only me then.
Okay.
As long as that's on the record and as long as the committee knows about it, Mr. Chairman, then I think we're covered as far as any possible problems that may arise in the future.
Well, we did agree that that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I asked and nobody objected to that.
Okay.
So I assume.
Okay. So should I just go right into the amendment?
Yeah, why don't we go to Amendment Number 2?
Okay. Amendment 1, I just discarded because I blended into Amendment 2. If you recall, in the... Let me explain what this letter does. I went through the letter and I went, and for each suggestion I put down whether I incorporate it into amendment, whether I incorporate it into the technical markup, or whether I discard it. So it just says technical no, amendment number 4, technical no. That's the
no means
that I asked the chairman And the chairman said unless the committee decided to bring it up, that we would not consider it.
But I'm going to give you a point in three categories. First, we got technical, we put those to them. It didn't change the substance of anything. The second category was amendments that looked like things that we either had to cover or the committee would probably feel that they were better. And then the third category was things that we'd already covered or gone the other way on. So I wanted to go through the technical first, these amendments here, because I think the price committee would like these. And then we can go into those, then we go to the other one.
Keeping in the spirit of the way he's handled the sentencing from the beginning, when you ask him to come back to technical amendments, he always tries to sneak in a few of the zingers. So the zingers will mark no, and the committee wants to bring them up.
The letter is all technical amendments.
Yeah. So are we ready?
So when we say amendments too, we're going
off. We're talking about, we're coming off the sheet of amendments now.
Which are taken from
all the amendments aren't taken, well, most of them, but there are a couple of changes in his recommendations, and I'll point them down as we go along. Okay, a classification of offense, amendment number two. When we were discussing this with the Attorney General and Mr. Rubenstein, we started getting concerned about the following problem. A person has either been convicted of a prior felony in Alaska, and it was not a classified felony at the time, or a person is convicted of a crime in another state that is a felony in another state, but they do not have classification, so they're anywhere similar to ours. So we start getting concerned about the fact of what, now that we're going to have aggravating and mitigating circumstances that depend upon whether the prior felony was a more serious offense or a less serious offense, what does that lead to litigation and to opening up the record of the prior judgment of what, find out whether that was a classification of offense that was similar to the Class A, Class B, or Class C felony. In order to alleviate that problem, Mr. Hickey and the Attorney General suggested that, which everyone else thought was a good idea, that we define what a Class A, Class B, Class C felony, and as long as we're doing that, we define what Class A, Class B misdemeanors were and violations. And then subsections B and C of the amendment were already signed off by the committee under designation of offenses in different sections, and they're merging together into one section and propose that as an amendment to Title 11 and not Title 12.
I heard everything except about the last sentence.
Subsection B and C of this proposed amendment were in. It had already been signed off by the committee in the previous draft in a different section. Basically, it says a felony not defined is a two felony, and a misdemeanor not defined is a two misdemeanor. That was, so I merged that into this amendment, sticking into Title 11 and stuff.
Yeah, I think you might not have done it here, but it's
true. Right.
That is, we could read a felony defined outside this title. That to mean a felony defined in any other law, which is not what he meant, but clearly when you were coming out of your generalized breakdown of A, B, C, because I'm sure what meant there is that you should say that came from Rome, so there'd be some guidelines for determining prior offenses before the effective date of the act or from other jurisdictions.
Well,
something outside Title 11.
That's right. I understand the intention. I'm saying that it can be interpreted more broadly than you intend.
I didn't understand.
As referring to felonies of other jurisdictions.
Felonies of other jurisdictions.
Oh. Defined outside the title that they can define new laws that aren't here before they will be effective. And I know that's not what you're
saying. Yeah, you're right.
Perhaps, though, that if it is defined in the law of Washington, and there is no penalty provided by the law of Washington, it should be treated as a state felony.
But if they just have a different way of describing conduct, that in fact, an A or B felon in Alaska, we want them to be treated as A or B felon for the purpose of determining the fire.
But that's not a problem anymore. Look at this, anything as a fire.
Look
is this the same Fed crime? Is it? Let's say it meets the first condition. The first condition is a felony in the state of Washington, which means it has to have more than 1 year. And it does not have a penalty specifically attached to it. And how do we decide in Alaska what kind of offense it is? So this says, well, in that case, it's going to be 2 felonies. If they didn't designate what the penalty was, but since it is a felony, we know if we have a brand new to do it.
Well, I got the idea that the reason for the first page here was to in part address the classification for the purpose of determining the nature of fires when you're addressing mitigation or aggravation.
Well, this part here, B and C had already been signed off by the committee in the primary distance section called designation of offense. Okay. It didn't have anything to do with,
well, whether it's your mistake or it's our mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mistake.
So, I mean, they can be created.
I don't see this problem at all.
I would not want this to be knowledge of it. Almost certainly be a Class A felony by the law of Alaska to a C felony, and then have a guy who was convicted of a D felony going in and arguing somehow that's a factor in mitigation.
No,
but in fact, it should be a factor in aggravation.
And that's the purpose of the original thing that does point that out.
That's that right, but this subsection D, if misinterpreted that way, can drive a freight train right through it.
No.
If he's right, if he was misinterpreted.
But it couldn't be.
I'm listening very carefully. A felony defined outside the title, period.
Well, how about a felony under Alaska law defined outside the title?
That's fine. That's what we have. Yeah, but what about a felony in the state of Washington?
Washington will take care of it.
Well, no. Then you go to page one and decide whether it fits into the definition of a Class A, okay, Class B,
Class C. Outside the title, when you left the statute.
Felony defined under Alaska law, but outside the title, something like that, whatever proper grammar is.
Oh, wait, let's figure it out right now. We're going to get it from printer. Huh?
Yeah, okay. Let's see how we do it.
Felony, I would just say a felony under Alaska law is defined outside the title.
I think that's right. By the way, I don't know what legislative affairs will do if I let you get away with it, but I sure think that phrase is so long that you need a comma after the word provided.
Where are we at?
The line six, just got one line down to go where you are. Just asking. You know, if they won't let you do it, not our style, well, that's where it goes. It'd sure be a lot easier to read with a comma.
Okay, well,
no, that's incorrect.
Is that incorrect?
That's at least. I think that takes care of my problem anyway. Yeah. I interrupted the tug in full.
No problem. How do you spell characteristics?
C-H-A-R-A-C-E-R-I-S.
Okay, here's the
A-L-L-Y.
Here's the A-L-L-Y. Okay,
that's the last. Well, he was a little bit older behind me in years. His older brother can spell a lot better.
Okay, does anybody have any more questions about amendment number two? As amendment two, let's see.
Oh, I see. That's the end of amendment two. Have we moved the amendment?
No.
I will call me.
The amendment number two as amended. Any objections?
Okay, now amendment number three probably the amendment that's going to create the most discussion by this committee. This was suggested by the Department of Law. I believe, if you may remember, we had a discussion about whether the constitutional provision in Alaska creates some problems with the Declaration of Purpose. Department of Law suggested it would be taken out. I can't give you a decision on whether it's constitutional.
My own feeling on it is that the way you set up the dumb sentencing, specific provisions you'll see later on in the amendment, but if you can't suspend FIAS, you can't have FIAS at first.
Mm-hmm.
I think that not taking it out, just asking for it, I think that the amendment is very important. Yeah, I agree.
No, the Attorney General suggested the amendment.
Right. What I'm saying is I agree with the Attorney General.
What he's doing is moving it to just one of the list.
That
way you're not saying that a certain factor that is contrary to what's in the Constitution is given primary weight over the other factors.
The important thing, of course, is that what we say, though, is that you must, for second offenders, you must be sentenced to presumptive term. So
we're arguing, of course, that has to be in there somewhere
if you do it the way it was originally drafted, you're just asking for it.
Yeah, the stuff that the dangerous language constitutionally is the word give primary weight to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm looking for the Constitution.
Well, the purpose of the administration shall be.
That's where the question is. I'm not very raised the issue last time. Maybe it's not.
It was also raised. I raised the question when the group leader and the movement factor and the local government were pre-questioning the question. And other people brought it up all along. The Constitution provision said,
the purpose of the penal administration shall be on the reformation of defense.
I did a memo on this for Senator Sackett on a completely unrelated subject to this.
It seemed to work for every legislator there is.
And there were several comments made on the floor of the convention at the time when they moved this section. One by Ralph Rivers, and they refer to more than just penal administration. They also refer to sort of the sentencing practice.
Article 1, Section 12.
So that, to me, it was strictly dedicated to penal administration. There'd be a pretty strong argument that a sentencing bill would not be unconstitutional. But by the language of the delegates on the floor of the convention, I think it might get a question of constitutionality. But then the Attorney General seems to feel more strongly than I do that it might be in the Constitution, as we're written now, and therefore the amendment is appropriate.
Now, the one way of looking at it, I just think drafting this way doesn't change the purpose clause that much from our point of view. And if anything, it does strengthen the complaint in the case.
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire if staff considered or if this committee's considered actually putting in the Constitution language in the Declaration of Purpose section?
I didn't consider that.
Penal administration should be based on the principle of reformation of the Father.
But I might have
the public. If we were to put it in legislative findings, and if we put it there, but then have it, then we would be raising the presumption that these other guidelines are based upon that general principle, and I think it would really help save and not any kind of attempt for that.
Well, I was just wondering about the possibility of putting constitutional language somewhere in the declaration.
No, I don't think
that question must have already been raised before.
I agree completely with the Attorney General. Yes. You have set up a sentencing structure that does certain things, and there is no need to put in the introductory section, the declaration of purpose, that the primary purpose of it is this, you know, and say this is the primary purpose, when that may in fact be in conflict with the constitutional provision. There's no need.
What's
that
got to do with my question?
In terms of penal, in terms of putting in the specific, why do we, that's even, I guess, requesting them. Why do you have to repeat the constitutional provision of the statute?
Well, it's an old Emanuel Seller judge in the House Judiciary Committee in Congress that he did for about 25 years. Whenever he wanted to make sure something could either constitutional or unconstitutional, it worked. Yes, it did. And one particular thing in Kingsbury wanted to make sure that in fact the bill passed was unconstitutional, that would be that in place of policy.
And the other, I guess the other argument would be is that there is a, perhaps an argument that penal administration does not mean sentencing. And
well, but that's what I said, you know, on the floor of the convention, they talked about sentencing and you know, and penitentiary and all that in the same sentence, in the same language. So, I don't know.
Okay, so far, I don't like this unnecessarily.
Okay, well, I'll just move the amendment.
The amendment number 3 has been moved. Are any objections? Okay, amendment number 3 is adopted. Amendment number 4.
Okay, amendment number 4 is suggested by the Attorney General on page 5, line 11. Just to make it clear that the court has the authority to specify a period of time or to specify installments for which you find. Common practice in the courts these days. Hardly anybody has the large fine, has the money to
you don't think that's implied in.
Well, I thought it was implied, but the law thought they wanted it in because to make it clear. You'll see that recommendation on.
Put somebody in jail for contempt of court. No, there's a prior section there. D is the thing, starting on page 4.
Yeah.
If you recall from payment of a fine, the number of things that shall cause why you should not be sent to prison is your non-payment. But I would presume that, in fact, if the record
of payment is in the
sentencing, if there were no jail sentence, I don't think you'd put them in jail for non-payment unless it was just a short period of jail for contempt.
I think it isn't clear anywhere in the fine section that the court does have the power to grant the installment. I think it's implicit.
Yeah, I move the amendment.
I think it's implicit to grant. It does make it clear.
Okay, do any objection to amendment number 4? No objection. Amendment number 4 is adopted.
Okay, amendment number 5, page 8, line 16. Now, this the committee is not at today specifically address the problem of should people who are sentenced to a presumed term be eligible for parole or parole before that presumed term has been satisfied. This amendment would make it, among other things, this amendment makes it clear that if you're sentenced to a presumed term, your sentence cannot be suspended, you can't have your imposition granted, or imposition sentence shall not be.
I think your language is better than the Attorney General.
This is an important section. This is what Barry was referring to earlier.
Section 180. This is a thing that we thought, I mean, that everybody thought was implied in the bill, which I was frankly sure that it was.
Well, they say, except for the extent under 180 or 200.
What is the three-judge panel?
Factors in aggravation, mitigation,
three-judge panel.
I don't even find that language in that was prepared at our request.
Doug, this isn't in Hickey's letter.
Yeah, this is in Hickey's letter, but his...
But it was also at our request because it came up and we listened to his testimony.
Now, this is in Hickey's letter, but Hickey's letter cites sections that aren't even in the statute.
Okay.
Page 7, at the very bottom. Look where you see amendment number 5.
Oh, all right.
His suggestion here cites sections that aren't even in the statute. He also, on subsection 1 on page 8, where he says, parole except under AS 3315-180 B and C may not be granted. There is no section B and C of subsection 180, and 180 grants parole after the right to parole after 180 days has been served.
Let me ask a question about the subsection B. I guess that means that unless we have specifically limited to this sentencing judge's discretion, he still has it in the other areas.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it means. That's what it means.
Okay. Let me ask you, what
did you decide that should be on line 8 there, number 2, for substitute for standard for
granted? Standard for granted. Hickey's suggestion would have said, I mean, it's kind of stupid in a way, because it says parole may not be granted except under AS 3315-180. Well, AS 3315-180 gives the power to grant parole after you've served 180 days. So that's basically what his proposed amendment would have done, would have said you can't grant parole until the guy served 6 months.
I mean, you corrected that here.
Yeah, I took it out.
Let me go back and just make sure I know what I'm doing. I've already checked sections 180.
Well, you want to look at that in the statute?
No, I don't think it is. I don't
think it looks all right. I just wanted to check it.
I'll take your word for it. Mr. Chairman, I would move amendment number 5 to change that on line 9, the typo be corrected and granted to change the suspended.
Okay.
Well, let me see, Mr. Chairman.
We can bring it up.
So, Rod, do you want to still go to the center?
Well,
it's not going to go. It's not going to go.
Well, we should. Why don't we decide it?
Well, let's go through that.
Okay,
we have number 5 as amended before. Is there any objection? There's no objection, Mr. Dodd.
Okay, amendment 6. Is page 10, line 23, our suggested aggravating circumstances. Now, they are the same as the ones recommended by law on page 9, except paragraph 13, I added the offense was knowingly directed at an officer of the court, comma. I added an officer of the court. I think I was concerned about the process here, but I think that's one guy that, you know, that, yeah, well, it's just,
they're already in the proposed amendment.
An active or former judicial officer. No, those are all the ones you recommended. I just added to it.
So just in terms of the record, on subsection 11 there, the pecuniary incentive was beyond that appearance and the expense itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason he did it was for money.
Yeah, basically, that's the contract.
Yeah, okay.
That's the hired stuff.
Yeah.
You know, or the hired, or the guy who breaks some when he's trying to collect money for, you know, what is it, the loan shark. Yeah, of course, the hitman.
Right.
Whatever it is.
See, we've got additional aggravating and additional mitigating.
And there's additional mitigating.
I'm going to move the aggravating.
One more comment. Paragraph 12 on the amendment is bail. Before and after, before conviction and after conviction. Person's released on bail.
So it got conviction of the thing.
Yeah. And that's an aggravating circumstance.
I move it and ask unanimous
consent. Type 1, line 4?
I'm on
unanimous consent.
I'll move it. Okay. Is there any objection to adoption of amendment number 6? There's no objection to adoption. Amendment number 7 is mitigating.
These are also recommended by law.
Would. For the first one, they actually have to show that, in fact, it would result in that possibility. I don't think that's the first one. Number 12 is too broad. It would be solely motivated. Otherwise, you could say that applies to anybody.
That's the only motivation I have to make here. I don't know what these guys
are. We just voted for all of us for the cops.
Department of Law. I mean, look at the letter. Look at page 10 of the letter from the Department of Law.
Now, I will say this, though, about this. They had some other ones that I told them were too far out. They don't even bother bringing them up before they had the line that keeps working. They were mitigating. They had more than
9. I can't go for 9 and 14.
I've got 9
and 11.
10.
No. 10.
Well, you like 11.
10.
I have 10
is
necessary.
You've got
to have 10.
Change standards, it's current law, and it's not...
You've got an opposite number in the aggravating.
Okay,
let's start at the top. Is there objection?
Move 9.
Yeah.
Let's take 9.
I move the amendment, then let's have some amendments.
Okay, Fred moved the amendment.
I object.
Okay, objection. Miles has moved to number 9.
After amendment consent.
Mr. Chairman, 9 is senseless for the reason that the guy's going to be in jail anyway, because it's only mitigated the circumstances that are going to reduce a presumptive term by 50%. So you're saying that even though he's going to go to jail anyway, and the court's going to pass the state anyway, that you're going to consider that as a mitigating factor.
I remove my objection. We're only talking about 10.
I don't care. It's not my objection. I'm
okay.
I apologize to
me. 10's okay. Anybody have any other beliefs?
I have
the
11.
Okay. What's the problem?
Protect the rich guy. The poor guy can protect who?
The poor is
detention, not infection.
So don't do...
Detection.
That's not well drafted.
Did you say detection instead of... It makes sense with detention.
It makes sense with
other words, before he got caught. Before he got caught, he went back and tried to compensate.
Let me just say that, before he got caught.
No, it was a typo.
Okay, with detection, that makes sense.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest a technical change to that. His detection, that if somebody determined that he existed, I think it means before the detection of
his offense.
Of his
it is pretty inartful.
Okay, before the detection of his offense.
No, you don't want to say that.
Why?
So you want to say before the detection that he didn't get him? You know what I'm saying?
Before the detection of his offense.
I see what you mean. In other words, before they found out there was an offense for
the found out. How about before the offense was detected?
Wait a minute. What you're really talking about is his knowledge. Before he knew that he was going to be charged with the offense. Maybe there's a secret indictment out against him, but he doesn't know about it, and he went back and he makes good anyway. Before he knew that the crime was detected. Yeah, before he knew that the crime was
detected. Before the defendant knew the crime was detected, he fully compensated.
The crime was detected?
Still, he got a verdict.
An offense.
Discovered. Before the defendant knew the criminal conduct was discovered.
That's
what I was getting at initially. Before he knew that his criminal conduct.
Yeah, I think that gets at what you mean.
Everybody got that. Before the defendant knew that his criminal conduct was discovered, before he kept.
Okay. I'll move that to the defendant. The objective of the amendment. The objective of the amendment to the any further
amendment. Oh,
amendment 12. Oh, so.
I think, Mr. Chairman, the one case I've seen where this could have been relevant, I haven't seen any other cases. There's one on the Kenai Peninsula here where a guy was tattooed to Homer Electric.
Yeah.
He raised the defense in trial that he'd done it solely because the family needed to, you know, he had to have the power and he couldn't afford it or something. I mean, of course, it was not a valid defense. But under these circumstances, if it had been a second offense or a second felony, he was convicted of grand larceny. Be a felony, then with this provision, that would have been
But just a moment, Mr. Chairman. At this hearing, the defense would put up
person knew that he was hiring somebody far beyond the harms of his own family, perhaps. And that is also before the judge. And he might still end up saying, well, normally I could aggravate 2 years, but mitigate a couple of years, but I believe the state, therefore I'm going to aggravate by 3. The factors in mitigation and aggravation are going to be on before the judge at the same time.
I grant you the from the hearing, and I know what the judge may make of the 1975. This is kind of old and different from every one of those judges that just looking at that.
I think it's put solely in the Joyriding. Joyriding a felon. The folks guy has a prior seatbelt. Now, we've also made several other things like that that are not, we've promoted several crimes. Okay, suppose you've got your second joyriding or even something where they might have approved the intention to deprive, but in either case, a felon. And the reason he grabbed the car this time was to run to the hospital and get his baby again.
I think what that overwhelming compulsion means there, Barry, is that it hasn't risen to the level of a defense where the guy's intent is actually different because of the mental state of mind, but it is a compulsion higher than a desire.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody could have a desire, right? But
I think
overwhelming compulsion, I think you want to leave it in there or you're rounding your white way.
No, I see, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I accept the proposed amendment to my motion, so it would now be motivated solely by an overwhelming compulsion. Provide emergency necessity for the immediate family, and I'll also ask that Mr. Polk and Mr. Stern stop people. Mr. Polk and Mr. Stern,
is there any objection?
perhaps change the grammar a little bit on emergency necessities.
Okay, any objections? No objections, any more amendments to the petition?
Mr. Chairman?
I vote for the
inquiry. Mr. Chairman, if that's true, then there wasn't the intent that was included as the element of the offense that was proved to the fact trier.
It's unlikely that a sustained intent to violate the law motivated.
What was the case for the product?
What is the view of
I'm out fishing.
This is a real typical thing that happens all the time. I'm out fishing, and you have this rule that you're kind of like the law of the land, like, you know, you've got trap lines, same kind of thing. There's no law that says this is my trap line, you can't trap it. There's no law that says this is my set, and you can't set it. But it is tradition, and everybody knows it. You set that length apart, and the first guy there is set. So you run out there and you wait, you know, 12 hours to open it. For the set. Some guy charges up to you, slaps the net up, and it's like stealing hundreds of dollars from you. You've just done it. And so people get fights over that. And, okay, well, the typical thing that happens is people run up alongside them and they help you just say, oh, you can't hear it. And, or you, in a couple cases, people ram the other guy's boat.
Right? Well, maybe we ought to let the law speak.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know if that works out.
Mr. Chairman, the language discussed, though, at that meeting, did, rather than have an intent to violate, it was at that meeting, because it's unlikely that it sustained an intent to violate the law.
I don't buy that, but there's 200 years of litigation, or what is it, sustained intent, to phrase never
I do think, a reflection, I do think that your suggestion might be an appropriate place to suggest the passage. You know, if the defense attorney made the case that this is such extraordinary circumstances, the guy should go to the pre-judge stand.
I really think they ought to delete it. You know, it's really going towards saying that there was some negation of one of the elements of the offense. Yeah, it's already been determined by the fact trier, and then you're going to come in and say, no, that they weren't really right.
Okay.
As to that, it's consent to delete.
There's no objection to the amendment of Section 14 is deleted.
Now, okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address Amendment 13, Paragraph 13. I don't often talk about policy. I think, you know what this does? This opens it up so that after a guy's busted, the prosecutor can put pressure on him to go out and do whatever he wants to do to be an informant or something like that. And he's got some kind of a provision here in law that you point the guy can see you got a chance of getting less time, but there's no guarantee on it. I think it's a very dangerous situation.
How did it ever get in here, Doug?
Well, he suggested it, and the parent signed off on it. So I just wanted to make that reference. I think it's a real poor policy to give the prosecutor the opportunity to do that when the guy can't be necessarily guaranteed. It's like telling him to grant immunity when he can't actually grant it.
Just to know, what are you saying? Are you saying that they're going to get quick concussions out of people because they'll say, well, we'll take care of your boys? That's not really what it says.
No,
it says you're going to get a sentence anyway.
Who are these other guys?
I think you ought to know what you're doing, because what it does is, after the guy's arrested, it gives it, you know, the prosecutor can come in and say, okay, if you be an informant, you got an opportunity to get less time, and you can't guarantee the guy's going to get less time. So I think it's a tool that can be abused.
Well,
I don't know. Other than
I can't find anybody else I can take it.
That's fine. I just wanted to do a stream
around that. One thing I'm concerned about, I wasn't coming from your angle, but I sort of did, was saying that if you are an informer, and even though you may be a third felon, there's going to be a mitigating factor that you are an informer. See, I didn't view it like you did, though.
Yeah.
I didn't view it as a tool to use. But think of what you're saying. You're saying that we consider you a better person in for sentencing purposes because you snitched on your friend. And even though it has no relationship to the offense you're being sentenced for. Larry?
Well, you know, they got laws about snitching on their friends in regard to accomplices and a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, there's way too much of this kind of...
Yes, but it's applicable to that offense. It's applicable to the offense that, you know, you're being prosecuted for. This says that if you have a history of being an undercover agent, say, just to the best example, in drug offense, if you are later arrested for a murder, has nothing to do with drug offense. It's a mitigating factor. But it says offense committed by another person.
Oh, I see. It should be contemporaneous. Not that you did it once.
You should make it, what it says is the status of an informer is a mitigating factor, even though it's not related to the offense. That's what bothered me, though.
Yeah.
If I came
I didn't think of that.
He's been an informer 10 years before, right?
Yeah. Now you could say to quite other person. You could, of course, limit it to the specific offense.
Contemporaneously with the
other person with him, you know, as an accomplice or as party to the crime.
Other persons. The uncovering occurred at this point in time.
You need some contemporaneous.
This has to be someone who has done.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you want to have it so that it says that even though it's not related, because you're an informer, you're better.
Mr. Chairman, I'll qualify my motion on Amendment 7. I'll move Amendment 7, but ask staff to come back with the language that makes it strictly clear that this is not applying to the fact that you were an informer 5 or 10 or 20 years before.
Okay, so the motion for us is what's left of Amendment number 7, which is 10, 11 amendments, 12 amendments, 13, probably 9 to 14 is over the group. Okay. Is there any instructions or questions?
I've never liked the idea of everybody wants to put what you have for us. And I think my dad's going to not try to do it with this drink. That's right, you know how we go.
I'm not saying that it's so essential to law enforcement. If you get to what time to do it, if you have a fair trial and you change something, does he get any credit? So he does in this gap. I was a study in there. If he did, he just go in and do these things and point out where the stolen property was and recover it and things like that and get a lot of this stuff as a result. I think at least, if there's a mitigating circumstance, I would want to at least, I think in this case, you just ask these kids a little bit if he's willing to do that, rather than the guy that just goes up there and says,
of course, your comment there wouldn't be covered by this, because to uncover offenses committed by other persons or to detect or apprehend other persons, if I was a prosecutor, I'd argue that because you said where the property was, that wasn't covered by this.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't have known that. Actually, I don't want one of the other men to get here. But he gets a chance there. I think the judge should be able to take into consideration that.
Gets right back to the fact that the subcommission and others drafting never thought of provocation, meaning other than provocation by
by violence or threats of violence.
So this would be amended to the
added simple assault, which put friendly stuff.
So none of you, I'm going to be able to say, unless you begin to provoke these rapes.
I'll tell you, I was concerned, you know, the Senate committee has rewritten sexual assault.
We haven't voted on it.
Well, that's why I'm concerned about voting on this amendment, because I think perhaps in a situation where you have a B felony is a sexual touching, that maybe you want to have some kind of a...
Why don't we hold this?
Okay.
And do sexual.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll vote with it as sex.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's an issue.
Well, I think the amendment that I'm offering makes it clear that it doesn't affect the sexual touching.
Yeah.
You know, but we'll hold this one.
Sorry. Are those the last amendments there?
Yeah, that's
okay,
Mr. Chairman,
then really what we have to do is review Section 140 and make sure that we agree with those. We never voted on those numbers. They may well be uncontroversial.
Well, also, Mr. Chairman, there are aspects of this letter that perhaps Mr. Dankworth or someone else might want to bring up that we decided not to include. I'm more than willing to discuss why I thought they were. Because I didn't think they were all policy changes. I thought some of them might have to work.
Mr. Chairman, we got the letter. I think any one of us might grab amendments and put it in later time. We haven't voted on what's before us, which is the number of Section 140.
Yeah. What's
page? Let's go to page 7, Section 140 first, and come back to the letter.
I'm going to go get a cup of coffee.
I can explain how this works. Okay. All right, we did vote on the murder there. It was 20 to 99 years, 5 to 99 years. And then, okay, we've got Class A felony. It says that on your first offense, you can be sentenced to 0 to 15. Okay, then on the second offense, you're 10 years, and then the third offense, 15 years. Okay, so... Effectively, what you're saying there was a 10 years because you got plus or minus 50%. You're talking 5, 10, and 15 is your ranges. And then on 15, you're talking 7.5, 15, and 22.5. Okay, then you go down to the B felony, 0 to 7 on your first, and then it's going to be 5 years on your second, and 10 years on your third. Right, so effectively you've got 2.5, 5, 7.5 on the second, and then 5, 10, 15 on the third. Okay, then on the C felony, you've got 0 to 3 on the first one, and you've got what will be 1, 2, 3 on the second, and then 2, 4, 6, okay, now, these numbers are basically the exact what the commission recommended, except rounded off a half here or a half there.
Oh, because they have their funny little ring.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Barry has brought up the point that when the commission recommended these measures, they were going to apply parole. And at this point, we have an amendment that they won't need parole. So, you know, there's always this question what you have to look at is how much time they serve and not what the numbers are. For some, there are some that we're proposing that there won't be any parole. And as recommended in the governor's bill last year, what they did was instead of parole, they just went to a simple discount to get rid of the parole board on these people and
pay off their nature.
Right. So whatever you want to pick the formula, you can go to a straight discount. And we don't, right at this point, we don't have a discount section in the bill. I think you probably should.
And how'd you get the good time from Jeff and Seth?
Well, I'm explaining, Fred, that these, as I said, start saying, these numbers are basically what the commission